Accession number 30646, Mr. Alan Campbell, Real Six. Now, so that was the officers. So most of them you don't seem to have liked too much, or just one you liked.
Captain Gladwin. Well, these two left it. The story goes that this particular one who didn't like me was supposed to have been sent back to the School of Signals, which was for officers. Whether that was true or not, but he just had that. The upshot of it was, I think he was after a medal of some sort. And he was always one of these, I want to be up the front sort of thing. But we was doing an actual swap over between the battalions, swapping positions. And Mr. Gladwin, the captain, that was the nearest I ever heard an officer call another officer a name, what you thought of him, because it was a total mess up and we were having to sort it out.
Now what about your NCOs, what did you think of them?
Well, they was good, because actually they was being rotated all the time, because who was going home and who was replacing them. We was actually got one line corporal who came to us, had been one of our instructors at Catterick, a Peter Donoghue. And there was 16 of us in the line troop, which contained linemen and drivers. So we had two tents between us. They was quite comfortable. We used to dig them in. We had to dig them in the winter.
How would you dig them in? What do you mean? Dig how far down?
You actually dig a hole the width of the tent, the size of the tent. You would put your tent in it, and then you would stockade yourself in. That kept the cold out, pardon me. Also, the snow and the rain. Because over the tent you had a fly sheet, so it was like a double protection. They was pretty snug, actually, in the winter. The only thing with the rains was you had nowhere to dry off. If you walked through the underbrush or the gorse, whatever, you got soaked, and then you just had to keep your clothes on because there was nowhere to hang them and dry them. That was pretty uncomfortable. But then we was going on.
Now, what were you doing with L Troop? You know, when you first joined them, what was your job?
It was the same job, checking the lines. Fault finding, you go out in a jeep with another man, and you would walk the line, or you would phone in every so often to find whether your line was out. So if it
now would they be the lines forward to the battalions, or
yeah, and then you would gauge your distance for checking in. If you were still getting brigade, you knew that you had to go forward up to battalions, their position, wherever they were. You had to find that fault between there and there. Sometimes the lines got really blasted with the mortaring.
How would you fix them then? Because, you know.
Well, we would have to replace them.
Altogether, that yeah. Section?
That was smithereen sort of thing. So then you had to do that, and I had to take out men to do what we call line recovery.
What's line recovery?
Exactly the same thing. You p- picked up all the old cable and you replaced it with a new cable. And you run it in, you checked it with battalions that they were receiving, and they could get back through to brigade headquarters plus div headquarters. So it's all communications all the time.
Now tell me about these booster boxes. What were they about?
They were black boxes. Black Bakelite boxes, I suppose about 3 to 4 inches diameter. They had terminals inside. You took the cap off. They had terminals inside with vents either side for the cable, quad cable, which is, as you can understand, it was a 4-ply quad. But that was mainly copper with it was a heavy cable, not like the normal Don 8 cable or Don 9 what we had, or the Don 90. And we didn't use too many of them because of the quantity of the cable itself.
So what were the booster boxes? They boosted the signal, or what did they do?
They boosted the signal, yeah. The junk, it was like a junction book where it actually went from the air to the air through the bit of a transformer or whatever, and that was it. On it went from there. But didn't have too much to do with that. That was, I suppose, one of the reasons why I spoke like I did. Pardon me. And then it was getting a really bit airy.
In what way?
With the malt rain. And
now, what was it like being under bad mortar fire? How did you feel? I don't want to...
Terrifying. We was hiding in... some fellas, they dived in bushes. I dived in the monsoon ditches, which was at the roadside, I suppose, 18 inches to 2 feet deep, which gave you a bit of cover because a mortar or a shell would explode upwards and outwards.
So it was both, it was mortar and shell fire?
Not so much shell fire, mostly mortar fire, because they used to see us going along the MSR to the hook. We were sort of saved like the hook was there. We had to go from here to the hook, and that was pretty open ground. They would be up on Ronson or other places like that. So they could actually watch us going along the road. And then the Americans decided to put a radar station or a listening station there. So now the road showed up a dusty yellow. Even in the dark, you could see where he was going because it showed up pretty bright.
What do you mean?
On the main road, that is.
What? Why was it yellow? I mean,
it was the earth. It wasn't a tarmac road or anything like that, or whatever they like to call it. Now this screen, we had to pass that to get to the hook, which was quite a hairy position. Being up on the top there in the crawl trenches and all the forward OPs and all the rest of it. This particular day we were going along, and as I say, I was getting a wee bit nervy. Because when you was walking the lines of a night time, you had fault findings at night. You got these Americans that insisted on sticking the nozzle of their weapons up your router. And knowing what they were like, I was very fearful. I'll be honest. Afterwards, we used to laugh about it, trying to swear, c- call each other names all the lot. Sort of like a relief valve. Quite a few occasions like that where we ended up taking the mick out of each other. But this one particular occasion, I was leading our little convoy for lion recovery.
Now, when you say convoy, you were in vehicles then?
Yeah.
Which ones? Jeeps?
Well, I was in a Jeep, but we had a three-tonner and a trailer behind. That was carrying cable. We were supposed to replace the cable. I had with me replacements that was coming to the troop to replace other people. Not through casualties, but through general rotation. And we got near this so-called radar station. And there was two Jeeps with trailers travelling in front of us with Negro Americans. And all of a sudden, it just shattered on us. And I was standing in the Jeep screaming at them, keep going, but they didn't. So they jumped out their Jeeps and left them slewed across the road, which we couldn't get past. And so we had to leave our vehicles, and I was screaming at the blokes, get out, just get out, just get away from the vehicles and get in the ditches. And we'd already had a bit of a complaint about the CO from Div, about our performance rate or something like that. And as it was, when I got into the ditch, these Americans was crawling up on me, and I was kicking one bloke on the head. And I was saying, get away from me, spread out. It's like self-preservation, whatever. Otherwise, you get too close up and you get a lot in one go. And then, when it was all over, we got back to the road, checked the damage. Our Jeep had been blown off the road. So the two front wheels were gone. And I was checking with all the fellas was all right. All right, carry on. Anyhow, the next thing was we had to send in, I asked my driver, don't get me wrong, I wasn't using a NCO status. I said, we'll have to get the recovery vehicle out to come and get us. At that moment, our own officer and the CO from Div drove up in their Jeeps, and they see what was going on, and we had to borrow their spare wheels, and we had to wait. They left us, and I said to the other men, go round the other side, keep out of the way, do what you can. You'll have to just walk it, that's all. I stayed with the Jeep because of our weapons. And I see my driver come walking back towards me. And this fella keeps shouting out, get down, get down. I gave him a mouthful of shutting the noise up, whatever. Anyhow, it started up again, and we dived into a ditch on the left-hand side of the road. Used to drive Yankee style out there on the right-hand side of the road. So I was walking towards it. Anything oncoming, I would be walking towards it. And because we had to dive into the ditch, and it seemed as we dived into the ditch, one landed on the top. I was deaf for about 3 or 4 days afterwards. That went off eventually. But it was the thought of going through these places of a night time, blundering through the dark. When you knew you was getting near anybody, you would call out near any lines, whether it was your own lines or American lines. You would call out, identify yourself if you was coming in.
Did you have passwords and things?
Oh yes, I did have passwords. But you had to make yourself known. But they insisted on keeping you covered. And I was always frightened something might go wrong. Even to the extent we was exactly the same situation. We was going to Nation OP, which was a listening post. They had Korean wireless operators there who was picking up the wireless calls wherever they was coming from and translating them, whatever they were for. They did have an American officer, so that if the position got overrun and they were taken prisoner, they were to be treated as soldiers, not as spies. And even to the extent of walking into that dugout, he's standing there and he's got a 9mm and it's accurate here. He can see who you are. And it was just a, whether it was a nervous reaction on their side, or our side, or both sides, I think we was all pretty frightened in those situations. And the last one we'd done, before I had to come home.
Now, save that.
Sorry.
Lots more questions before that. Unless you were only there for a couple of weeks.
No, I was here.
I thought tell me about the Jeeps. I mean, what did you think that you didn't drive yourself?
No, I didn't drive myself.
What did you think of your Jeeps? I mean,
they were good.
What's good? Because they seem to be very popular. What was so good about the Jeeps?
Well, they had overdrive and four wheel drive. They could sort of crawl up a hill. They was actually what they were. They was a Ford one-time Willys Jeep, and that's all I know. He had a gate gear, 1, 2, and 3. Then you had your double gear, your booster gear, and overdrive. It was pretty open, pretty basic. We had rifle racks on them, different things. Spare wheel, fuel tank, extra gasoline, jerry can, like, you know. They were pretty good things. And also
Reliable?
Yes. Also, we had 1,500 weight Morrises, which I thought was a better vehicle than the 1,500 weight Bedford.
Now, why? Because the Bedford's the more famous of the two.
Oh, they was famous, but the Morris seemed to have more guts in them. You could go through different places with them where you couldn't with a Bedford. I thought that was my only opinion.
And what was the Morris like?
That was a 1500 weight mice. Very reliable because it was always loaded up with gear, MAL poles, all the usual equipment that we would need in an emergency or for replacing something that we saw or whatever. So we always carried that.
Now, when you got there, it was November, so it'd be already cold or getting cold.
It was getting cold. We was issued with our winter gear.
Now, what was your winter gear?
Well, that consisted of a different uniform altogether. You had like a thicker olive green trousers, over trousers. You was issued with under trousers, which was like the heavy knitted woolen, but there was no good to linemen. It was too bulky, and if you got wet, that was it, where you was wading through different places. So we used our long johns instead of the heavy under trousers. We were given different tunics, winter warmers, which was done up to the collar, zipped up, and then buttoned over the top with breast pockets. And then we was given the parkas, I think was the most famous one of the lot, because they was like kapok lined. They had a towel at the back of them, which was when you undid that and you pulled it through your legs and you strapped it to the front of you, it was like you ended up as though you was wearing a paratrooper smock. The hood itself had a metal rim in it. So when it got really, really bitterly cold of a night time, as a day time as well, you could actually fold that into a small tea slit. That way. Yeah. You had a job to take your gloves off in the winter. You touch anything metal, you could take your gloves off, but you had to be very careful how you touch metal, otherwise your hands would stick to it.
Now, how cold was it, and what effect did it have on you?
It's the sort of effect that when you see two ex-Korean blokes, nearly the first words out of our mouth was, "Do you remember them winters?" Because it had the same seasons as England, but far more drastic conditions. When it was hot, it was very hot. When it was wet, it was very wet. And when it was cold, it was very, very cold.
And what was it like in the cold? How did you cope? You only had tents, didn't you?
We only had tents, but as I say, like, you know, it was we were issued space heaters, which was, we had to make a hole in the tent with a metal rim round it and run a funnel through that down into the actual space heater, which was about so big.
And,
yeah, and that would have a drip feed petrol, which was fed from a upturned jerry can outside the tent. And it used to be very hot up close to it, but you didn't have to move too far away to get cold. We were issued with sleeping bags, and all the very good gear. The Americans was always after our parkas, because their parkas was nothing like ours. They were always after weapons. Even Sten gun.
Come back there, keep to the cold.
Yeah, keep to the cold.
So how did you cope? How bad was it for you?
Well, I manage pretty well. The only thing was the wind. When it used to come down through the valleys and that, by golly, it was cold. And, because, like, going out of a night time, fault finding, somebody would come to the tent and report the lions out to Blue 2 or White 3 or White 2, something like that. Because the battalions was given red, white and blue, one and two, each one. And if there was a fault on that line, you had to go out and search for it and find it and repair it.
Wasn't that difficult with all these gloves and freezing cold?
Yeah. As I say, on top of that, if you was unlucky enough, you had to cross paddy fields, you was breaking through the ice and getting nice and wet and cold, and the snow. So it was a bit airy conditions, really. It wasn't too bad if you could stay dry. It was when you got wet on top.
Now, what was a typical day like for you then? Give us an idea, a typical day, you know, when you were out there.
Well, a typical day was, you would wake up, you would get the, each tent had a telephone, through to the operator's wagon, or tack wagon. You'd get the operator to give you an early morning call, so you would wake up. You'd get yourself pretty clean, cleaned up the best way you could.
How would you do that? Did you have any showers or anything?
Oh, you're joking.
I am. Sorry. How'd you do it then? Or how'd you try?
Well, we used to try and warm a pan of water up. We got different things to put water in. If it wasn't frozen, we would stand it on the space heater to warm through. There was no excuse for not shaving. So it was a typical keep yourself clean, make do a man, and then you would get your breakfast.
And was the food still just this combat tin, or did you get, when you were with
no,
the
you
food?
You got
so what was the food like?
That was cooked. You'd get bacon and egg, or you'd get porridge, or different things like that. It's all according to what they had on the menu, you would get it.
And what about it? We'll do all the food together, dinner and tea, what would you use? Just a cooked meal then as well?
If you was in camp.
Well,
if you stayed in camp, you got your three meals a day.
By camp, you mean where you lived?
Yeah. If you were out on the line, that's when you took rations with you.
And then you'd be back on the combat rations.
Yeah. And you would, first thing, before you grab your rifle, make sure you've got your billy can.
BT.
Yeah.
And your food.
Yeah.